Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You might think financial crime is all about money, but sometimes it ends in murder. I'm Nicole Lappin, host of Money Crimes, a Crime House original podcast. Each episode features a thrilling story about the dark side of finance and how to protect yourself from it. Follow and listen to Money Crimes, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Dub Nation, it's Trace Jackson Davis, and you're listening to The Morning Roast with Vontae Hill and Joe Shasky on 95.7 The Game.
What's up, TJG? Trace Jackson Davis. My guy, Trace Jackson Davis. I say everyone's my guy, Sam Lubman, because we had a lot of the Warriors players and staff and coaches and announcers do rejoins for all the shows. And a lot of them did some for the pregame show. It was great. The pregame show, Joe Spadoni, Monday through Friday with myself, 5 to 6 a.m. You'll hear Sam a lot, actually, as well. He chimes in if he's not knee-deep in morning roast prep work, because he's doing that. There's a lot baked into that. But I have a lot of rejoins, and Trace Jackson Davis is one of them. But you know who didn't do rejoins for me?
Draymond.
Draymond or Steph Curry? It's a tough scene. Yeah. Yeah. So everyone else, everyone else on the team is actually my favorite players. I'm not going to say I root against Steph and Draymond for not doing a recording of you're listening to the pregame show, Joe Spadoni, but I'm not saying that. So it just is what it is. I got beef with them. Although I just did get a Stephen Curry jersey.
There you go. So it's come a little bit better.
So there
now.
You go. Yeah. The NBA City Connect jerseys that they were wearing
there you go.
The other day.
Wear it to the next Laker game.
Yeah, there you go.
So
on 95.7 The Game.
Love it.
Yeah, that's the end of the segment. That's the end of the show, people. See ya. No, it's been a great show. We were actually been flying by, and this Warriors talk has been really good. And we'll get into some of the Giants, because I know you have some Giants thoughts here, maybe in the next 20 minutes or so. But we'll get back into what took place yesterday in Thanksgiving. We're not letting Matt Eberflus off the hook. We're just not doing it as a show today. So we're going to get into that at some point as well, because that was just a disaster. And yes, 49ers fans, it can get worse. I'm just letting you know. Your head coach, Kyle Shanahan, is not the biggest problem here when it comes to the Bay Area hierarchy of coaching and whatnot. But back to the Warriors here. You had something you wanted to say about one Jonathan Kuminga, who didn't get his contract at the start of the season, has been coming off the bench, and has been playing pretty well, I thought. And, you know, a lot was made about Lauri Markkanen, and is it Pods or is it Kuminga? Can you get rid of one of them? Can you get rid of both of them? So on and so forth. But they paid Moses Moody. You know, he got his contract. Wasn't what Jonathan Kuminga is looking for. He's looking for $150 plus million kind of a dollar. He's looking for the bag. I don't know if he's going to get it from the Warriors, but I also know the Warriors aren't in a position where they can just flip Jonathan Kuminga as soon as possible for the next best thing. So where are you at, Sam Loveman, with Jonathan Kuminga, his play, and his future with this franchise?
No, I think, I mean, Kuminga, again, he's a big reason why the Warriors are better this year. He's averaging 14.6 points per game off the bench. That's fourth best in the NBA. Him and Buddy Hield, I think Buddy Hield, I think he's got like the third most points off the bench right now, points per game-wise. That is a big reason why the Warriors' bench is the highest scoring bench in the NBA. And that depth has been a bit, it's been carrying them a lot early on as they stack these wins to start the season here. He's thriving in that role off the bench. Like he's you know, potential six man, you know, consideration even right now, the way that he's going so far this season. He's a plus 37 off the bench, which is ninth best in the NBA, which, you know, top 10 is always good. He could probably get up to top five, hopefully, which, you know, he's missed some games too, which definitely hurt him as well. But, you know, it's just this year, more than ever, like the Warriors cannot be afraid to utilize his skill set. It's just he has all the tools, I think, to be not just a great defender and a great scorer. So I think he's got it all to be great on both sides of the floor there. And he's been, in limited time, one of their better clutch players, too. And by clutch players, I mean in clutch time, which, you know, as for those who don't know, clutch time in the NBA is defined as, I believe, as a five-minute game with 5 minutes to play. Five-point game with 5 minutes to play. So, and the Warriors, they've played 10 such games now after their game against OKC the other night. They're 5-5 in those games. They're 7.8 points per game in clutch time. It's 23rd best in the league. Jonathan Kuminga, though, has been one of your better scorers in clutch time behind Steph Curry, albeit in less games and less minutes. So I kind of like try Kuminga more out in these closing lineups here, even when Steph comes back, and see if he can get some going there, because Jonathan Kuminga, it's just they're gonna have to make a decision with him because he is a restricted free agent after this year, and the Warriors, I'm not quite sure what their financial situation is going into next year. I know they're hard cap next year it might be different, but so the way, obviously, for again, restricted free agency, any deal that is made to a player, the Warriors will have, I believe, 24 hours to at least match it. If some other team comes along, like a team that's a ton of money, like the Rockets or one of these other young up-and-coming teams, and just drops a fat contract in front of JK, I don't know right now if the Warriors will go out of their way to match it, depending on, you know, how big that number is. But right now, what we're seeing this year, Jonathan Kuminga, the way he's flourished on the bench is, again, a big reason why the Warriors are in a good spot right now overall, even despite this recent three-game losing streak.
888-957-9570 is the number. We go positive negatives here with in regards to the Golden State Warriors. What are you feeling best about? What are you not feeling so good about right now when it comes to the Dubs? They're on a three-game losing streak, so I don't want to, you know, act like everything's sunshine and rainbows. This team is struggling a little bit right now. Stephen Curry sounded like he's going to play tomorrow against the Suns. They're going to need him. The Suns have been playing very well. Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, et cetera, Devin Booker. You know what they got over there. Yusuf Nurkic, clearly, is a little disgruntled, too. And there's obviously, as we talked about last segment, history between him and Draymond Green. So, Suns, Nuggets. We're going to start looking at this team against some of the big boys in the West, the teams we expect to be there at the end of the season. I don't know if people are still expecting the Warriors to be like, I don't know if we have that respect for them as a society, as a media, quite yet. Are we ready to slide the Warriors in as legit contenders? I know they got Steph.
Flip the switch.
And it's interesting, right? Because I do feel like we give that to certain teams, not others. I mean, Stephen Curry did win a title a couple years ago. Draymond Green was a part of that team. Andrew Wiggins was a part of that team. I know they don't have Klay Thompson. I know Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody didn't contribute much that season, but they played, and they were a part of that.
They helped.
They helped. Steve Kerr has been there and done that. Why aren't we giving them kind of that love, if you will, of like, hey, this team's third in the Western Conference right now. What's to say they can't win the whole damn thing? Is that just because the depth of the West and people are expecting the T-Wolves to get better at some point? They're expecting the Mavericks to be better at some point? They're expecting Chet Holmgren and the Thunder to take that even that next step? Why are we so reluctant right now, Sam Loveman, to, you know, give the Warriors that, you know what, their legit contender title? right now? Why are we hesitant right now with that?
Well, think of everything we've seen over the last couple of years. I mean, we've seen a team that's routinely been hovering around the 500 mark basically all year long. I mean, what was it, a couple of years ago? I don't think they never got more than four games above 500. I think it was the punch year.
Yeah, but the Lakers are like that. But we say LeBron and AD, you know, they can do it.
Well, yeah, and I really
how come
sound,
they get that level of respect
because,
and not the Warriors?
Because it's LeBron James, that's why. And because
he's 40.
Well, it's LeBron James, that's why. Like you can say, like it's Steph Curry. As much as we love him, he is not LeBron James. LeBron James has a level of benefit of the doubt that deserved right now or not, he still has it. No, the Warriors, just the last 2 years, and this could be a situation where just here in the bubble, we're too close to everything. So maybe if we go outside, like we've had people, who was I? We had someone at the beginning of the year talking about how they still fear Stephen Curry. I forget who it was. It's escaped me at the moment, but it was someone from, you know, outside the Bay Area.
Oh, it was the New Orleans Pelicans.
That's who it was.
Who
yeah,
was it? We'll get his name in a second.
Yeah, he kind of talked about, you know, he still fears Steph Curry. Like Steph still strikes fear into other teams around the association. But no, as to why they don't get the benefit of the doubt is that it's the last couple of years, I think, have just kind of...
Antonio Daniels,
there you go. The last couple of years have just kind of, I think, just kind of put a damper on things. Because the last 2 years, he's just seen a team that's really struggled to get out of their own way and put some distance between themselves and a 500 record. This year, they're doing it. But now you see a three-game losing streak, and it's just... You know, if they had a losing streak like this maybe a month from now... I don't think you're not feeling as tight, but it's early in the season. You can make the argument that was just a hot start. Now they're coming back down to earth. Like, it's still early enough in the season that we don't quite know what this team is. We know that they're better than last year, but the question is how much better. They were a 44-win team last year. So, you know, you got, you know, the unanimous or, you know, the anonymous.
We're a 43-win team, dude.
Exactly, Nick. But you have, you know, the anonymous players saying they're going to win 50. I don't know if they're quite at the 50-gate win level yet. 48, 49 wins, that could be their ceiling. But yeah, I just think it's early enough in the year. The frustrations of the last 2 years are still very much on everybody's mind. And it's at a point where, yeah, they could be coming back down to earth. So we'll see what these next couple weeks tell us about this team. They have one of the tougher schedules in the NBA to the end of the new year. So, yeah, I think that's kind of where the trepidation comes in.
I think it's wide open. I really do. I'm just looking at the teams, the collection of talent right now. I know we expect the T-Wolves to be there at the end. We expect the Mavericks. Those are the two teams that represented the Western Conference Finals last year. I know we expect the Nuggets. I know they're playing. They've been up and down this season. But Jamal Murray and Jokic, can they get on the same page? And then
Thunder will be there.
Thunder, yeah, exactly. They're number one right
now. Grizzlies are a lot better this year.
And we'll see what the Grizzlies... Again, I'm saying I don't like fear. Like, there's not one team in the West I fear right now. If I'm the Warriors, I don't fear anyone in the Western Conference. I feel like I can beat anyone. In a series is different. In a series is different, and we'll get to that at some point. Well, it's going to be at some point. It's going to be next March, April, whatever it is. But I don't fear anyone in the West right now. If I'm in the East... Yeah, I'm not beating the Celtics or the Cavs. I'm just not. And by the way, lock it in right now. It'll be Celtics, Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference Finals because the East stinks. Sorry, Magic. I know you've been doing. They're 9-1 in your last 10 without Paolo Banchero, and it looked like he might be out for the year. We'll see.
Yeah. I think maybe the Bucks have the ability to get in there.
Five in a row. Yeah.
The Miami Heat. They're always a team that, you know, you can't legally
count
them out.
The Knicks, Kenny. I don't know about your Knicks right now. We'll see. They're 6-4 in their last 10. I don't know about the Knicks, but I...
But, you know, to your point, yeah.
The West, though?
The East, it's two teams.
Open.
Yeah. Also, you say there's no team that you would fear in the West if you're the Warriors. I kind of look at it the other way around. Like, any one of these teams, I'm looking at the top, you know, 12 right now in the West. Basically, everybody other than Portland, Utah, and New Orleans... Any of those teams can beat any of these teams on any given night. You know, you throw the Suns against the Grizzlies. That's a toss-up. Let's throw the Timberwolves and the Rockets together. Who knows what happens there? How about the Kings and the Lakers? That could go any sort of different ways. Mavericks, Clippers, good luck with that one. Like, any of these teams can beat each other on any given night. So, I mean, you might as well just have all these teams tied in the standings at the end of the year, because that's just how even it's going to probably feel once these playoffs start.
888-957-9570. Our guy Gene is out in Oakland,
Gene,
Sam. He wants to join the conversation. I hope you had a lovely Thanksgiving. 888-957-9570. What's going on, Gene? You're on the Morning Roast. You have a nice Thanksgiving?
Indeed I did, guys. I hope you did, too.
We did.
Yeah, had a wonderful meal. Yeah, I'm trying to see what I can do to lose the 2 or 3 pounds I put on yesterday. But anyway. All right, so, listen. I think you hit on it, Spadone, when you said that Dre's going to have a real test going up against Nurkic. Excuse me. Yeah, absolutely. I want to believe that he's made major progress, and so far he's looked good. But I said in the beginning of the year, I said as soon as somebody pulls on his shirt or drags him to the floor, then that'll be the real test to see if he is able to restrain himself and not, you know, haul off and try to hit the guy. Nurkic is the perfect foil for that, so we'll see, you know. And if he is able to control himself, then I'm ready to say, yeah, he really is making serious progress, and I'm gonna feel better about, you know, moving forward with him and not having him suspended. Now excuse me, I wanted to say something about your question. What do you think is the biggest disappointment? For me, the biggest disappointment is losing D'Anthony Melton. Maybe I'm putting too much on it, but I believe what Steve Kerr said, that he completed the team. I look at the last three losses. We may have won two out of those three losses if we had a healthy D'Anthony Melton. And I thought he was what we really needed to go deep into the playoffs. So I don't know how we're going to compensate for that, but I think that was a serious loss, and it maybe even a devastating one.
Yeah. Thanks, Gene. Appreciate the call. 888-957-9570. You know, some pleasant surprise, your biggest positives, your biggest negatives right now with the Golden State Warriors. Gene saying the loss of D'Anthony Melton. And yeah, what he could have done, he was that Swiss Army knife, if you will. He can plug and play anywhere, offensively, defensively. He was a huge starter. He was the missing link, if you will, that last piece of the Rubik's Cube puzzle that you needed to finish. And now it feels like it might be unfinished the rest of the season. We'll see if they can make moves, if they move off of him. I know Slater talked about it a couple days ago. Maybe they're going to find out a lot about the team in the next month, is what I know. They're having discussions internally right now about this team. How for real are they?
Yeah.
And I think they're looking at this next month of December to find that out. You're going to have some NBA Cup matches. Are they going to be playing? Hey, they'll be playing a couple more contenders that you maybe not have seen later on in the season. Like, they don't play the Lakers until Christmas. Maybe they see the Lakers earlier than that. You know, there's going to be some games here that they didn't have on their schedule, potentially, if they move up into these standings.
They'll be against better teams,
too. I need to find that bracket right now. Where are the Warriors at in
the
NBA Cup?
So, yeah, the NBA Cups can be taking place between the 9th and the 18th, it looks like.
Here we go. The Emirates NBA Cup, excuse me.
Oh, yeah,
so, right now, the Warriors are in the West Group C right now. They're leading it off. They're 3-0 in that, so they should be a lock right already, right?
They've already clinched a spot.
Clinched a spot, so they got that. They clinched the group already. Eliminated from that group already is the New Orleans Pelicans. You still got the Mavs in there, the Nuggets, and the Grizzly. The Grizzly's not yet eliminated. Some other news and notes from around there. Suns, Lakers leading West Group B. Suns have the point differential, though, on top of them. And then in Group A, you got the Rockets clinching the group at 3-0. Then you got the Clippers, Blazers, T-Wolves, and Sacramento Kings all jockeying for position there. So, there you go.
It looks like it's the three group winners in each conference plus one wild card winner. Is that supposed to be the...
Correct. And the wild card winners right now, it would be, if it just ended right now, it would be the Dallas Mavericks would be there at 2-1.
Yeah.
And then the Spurs, and then the Lakers.
Yeah, so right now, Houston, the Suns, and the Warriors are your automatic qualifiers right now. I'm sorry, who'd you say it was for the West?
For the
wild card?
The Dallas Mavericks, because they have a plus 41 point differential.
And I assume, I don't know what the seeding's going to look like. I assume seeding is based on record and point differential. The Warriors are 2-0 with a plus
49.
12 differential. 3-0. I'm looking at an older one. Yeah, 3-0 with a plus 12 differential. Suns are 2-1 with a plus 19 differential. Houston is 3-0 with a plus 55 differential. Wow, they're killing it. So looks like the Rockets would probably be the one seed there. And I don't know if Warriors, or it looks like right now the Warriors be playing the Suns, in that first round of the NBA Cup.
Everyone's really excited about the NBA Cup. I mean, it's just a huge, huge tournament that everyone really wants to hang that banner like the Lakers did last year.
We really need a parade down Market Street there. We're going to be doing that remote broadcast out there, get that loud old baby that permeates down the street. Like, it'll be nice and chilly because it's going to be in the middle of December. Like, yeah, none of that stuff's actually going to happen. But
the biggest win of the year for any Bay Area sports team, and I'm not counting the NFC Championship game.
What are they going to say about Steph after he wins the NBA Cup? Like, they're just going to keep coming up the final. Oh,
what are they going to say now?
He never won an NBA Cup MVP. But yeah, no. So it's
it's the whole thing is it's always gonna be something. Very contrived. It is, but I think it adds a little juice. I'm not mad at it. People are trying to like poo poo it as much as they can, but it's fine. It's more basketball. That's all I care about. Like, that's all I care about right now. If the NFL tried to do anything like that, though, that'd be something else. It'd be kind of crazy.
That'd be hard to do.
It'd be adding more games and more field of fire.
I think baseball should try something like that. Like, in-season baseball tournament to liven things up, because, you know, in May and June, it can get
pretty heavy.
Get pretty stale.
Well, I want to get back to this real quick, because we're going to hit the Giants as you speak in baseball here. I'm going to get to that in just a second. To put a bow on this Warriors talk, though, as Gene was bringing it up, Draymond Green. A huge test for him tomorrow, going up against Nurkic. Last year in Phoenix, going up against Nurkic. The pimp slap, as I'm calling it. He was suspended indefinitely after that. You know, he's been on his best behavior so far this year. There's been some, I'm not going to say incidents, but there's been some times where I'm like, okay, let's relax here.
By Draymond standards, it's been better this year.
He's,
by normal people standards, yeah.
Yeah, he's, you know, had some scuffles here and there. Had some, you know, just some technical fouls, flagrants. It is what it is. But has he earned your trust back at all, Sam Lubman? Has he earned a level of trust with his style of play and his accountability this season?
A level, yes. Fully, no.
Okay.
It's trending in the right. It's at a point where, you know what, I'm willing to, you know, believe in Draymond Green. You know, much like Harvey Dent, you know, I believe in Draymond Green. No, I am. Has he fully won me back? No. I am cautiously, though, giving him my trust with the hope that knowing that if it blows up, I set myself up for disappointment. But so far this season, yes, I like where everything is at with Draymond Green right now after, you know, the Warriors have played 18 games here on November 29th, 2024.
And there you go. 888-957-9570.
You know Nurkic is going to be testing him, though.
Yeah.
Right? He's going to poke him. He's going to pinch him. Like, you know Nurkic is going in tonight thinking, what can I do to get Draymond Green to take a swing at me? And unfortunately, that's the reputation that Draymond's brought on himself. You know, players going to know that this guy, if you poke him and prod him the right way, you will get him to lash out, and that will bring all sorts of nonsense on him. So Nurkic, he's going to be all up in Draymond's grill tonight. So that's tomorrow night. So that'll be very interesting to see. We talk about, you know, the Warriors' big test with the schedule. This is going to be Draymond's first real big test going against Nurkic here.
Speaking of tests, as we shift over to some baseball talk, there's going to be a first big test, a pop quiz maybe. A test is too strong because this is his first go-around for Buster Posey this offseason. Now, you know, the head honcho, Farhan Zaidi, he's out, Buster Posey in. He's going to have his imprints all over this San Francisco Giants organization, Sam Lubman. I know you're tapped in with the Giants more so than anyone else at the station. Garlic Fries and Baseball Guys pod. You and Shasky do a hell of a job. Find that
new
podcast.
New episode available now.
There you go. Where? Tell everyone.
Wherever you listen to podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Odyssey apps, even on YouTube now, so you can see what Shasky and I look like.
There you go. So find that. And I'm curious what you have thought about, first and foremost, the shift to Buster Posey. And, you know, Blake Snell was a Giant last year. They kept him. Farhan didn't feel like he got enough to want to part ways with a Blake Snell. He didn't see like any contenders weren't giving up at high-level prospects that he sought, or everyday players, current players that are major leaguers that, you know, can plug and play right now. So they kept him. And what happened? Well, he goes to the Dodgers, signs 180?
Yeah, 5 years, $182
million. $182 million. And now Blake Snell's a Dodger. And the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. It's a tale as old as time. But what's the biggest area of improvement for you, Sam Lubman, that needs to take place for Buster Posey to have immediate success here as the new head honcho? What's his official title? Is it
President of Baseball Operations?
Okay, so that is his official title. They got the general manager, Manasian, coming over from the Brewers, and his brother, obviously, general manager over with the Los Angeles Angels. So he's got that. He got Randy Winn. He's what, executive, player personnel.
Development. He was a roving instructor for a little while.
Evans is now back over here.
Bobby Evans and Jeff Barry are getting the band
back together from a decade ago.
A little bit, it sounds like that. I mean, Evans and Barry are being brought in basically to kind of be advisors, which they kind of were already doing. Buster was just on Buster Olney's podcast the other day, talked about kind of what this first month plus, or almost 2 months now, on the job has been like. And it's been a lot of learning. You know, that's why Evans is there. Like, when Evans was hired, the way Giants fans were acting, you think that Evans was going to be wielding full control of everything in this organization. No. Like, Bobby Evans is basically there to tell Buster, hey, this is how you do that. This is how guys are going to do this. This is what you're going to run into when you try to do something like that. Like, that's what Bobby Evans is for. Jeff Barry, he's there to be like, hey, this is how agents are going to act. This is what agents will say to you when you say this. This is what agents are wanting for that. So, like, what their roles are, that's basically what they're going to be doing there. But yeah, it's been kind of a sleepy start to the Buster Posey era. Now, granted, part of that's just how baseball is these days. Moves don't go popping off right away like they used to. The winter meetings are going to be in a few weeks, so my guess is you'll start seeing some activity there. But as far as what Buster Posey has to do here, I mean, I think you're looking at a season that's going to be basically an evaluation year for the Giants. Like, I don't think this team's that far away from a playoff spot, but from, like, meaningful contention, I think they got a ways to go. They got a hole in the rotation now that they need to fill. So that's going to be part of it. Do you feel that internally? Now, you do got Robbie Ray coming back to go behind Logan Webb. You got two good young pitchers in Hayden Birdsong and Kyle Harrison. So you do got a rotation. You know, we saw some young guys last year, like Landon Roop, come up and, you know, have some muted success here and there. But yeah, you need to shore up that pitching rotation. And you need a shortstop. They don't want to put Tyler Fitzgerald there. He doesn't seem like he might be moving over to second base. I don't know what Tyro Estrada's future is going to be. It seems like he's just completely, you know, fade away into dust, like Thanos snapped him out of existence. So they need to move on there. Ha-Seong Kim is the name that keeps popping up as being the perfect fit for the Giants. Sure, I think that's an okay move. It's a solid move. I don't know if that's a takes you to the next step move. I know
233, 11 jacks, 47 RBIs, 94 hits.
And he's
year.
A guy though with Ha-Seong Kim. He's gotten better every year that he's been in the bigs. And I look at his arc through baseball as being something what we would see similar to Jung-Hoo Lee. But Jung-Hoo Lee's basically go through his rookie year 2.0 next year after he missed the entire season, most of the entire season last year with a shoulder injury. So you need to figure out shortstop. I know a lot of Giants fans probably want Willy Adames. I was caping up for him, Adames, the other day. There's a very good chance that Willy Adames just gave you a very, you know, stereotypical contract year last year. But the other one is first base. They need to figure out first base there. Lamont Wade Jr. is not a first baseman. He can play the position. He does an okay job at it, but like Lamont Wade Jr., who did get tendered, so he will be back next year. He's okay at the position. Offensively, though, when you look up Lamont Wade Jr. highlights, every highlight video is titled, you know, Lamont Wade Jr. bat flips after ball four. Like, that's your highlight reel, is bat flipping after you draw a walk. Like,
Next level. I'd do that.
No, it's just, that's ridiculous. Like, I'm glad that he can get on base. He's one of the best in baseball at getting on base. But, like, dude, I need a second level of your game. When your only thing you can do is draw walks, that's not big leaguer energy right there. So, yeah, it's find another starting pitching option, you know, somewhere in the middle of the rotation, a 2-3 starter option. Or just go big and sign Corbin Burns. I know that's okay.
Why not?
Figure out that shortstop position. Probably going to be Ha-Seong Kim, so Giants fans get ready to be disappointed. And then I don't know what you do at first base, because Pete Alonso probably isn't going to walk through that door. I've been banging on the table saying, you know, go make the trade for Bo Bichette and Vlad Jr. That seems like a long shot. So realistically, what's that?
Paulie Goldschmidt? You want him?
Honestly, on a one-year deal.
How old is he? Jesus.
37 years old. On a one-year deal to hit 230 with 16 bombs, like, you know, eight of those bombs coming when the Giants are down, you know, eight runs.
You know what they should do? if Bozy really wants to bring the band back together, during BP, just fly in every day or wherever you're going. Tim Lincecum to throw in BP. Will be hitting nukes the entire
there
time.
There you go. Got to find Timmy
first. I swear
first.
To God, Paul Goldschmidt hit the farthest home runs I've ever seen off a guy named Tim Lincecum. Oh, my God.
He was...
Lincecum killer.
Oh, the total Lincecum killer. It was...
He's 37, geez. Man.
Yeah.
You know, Hall of Famer, Paul Goldschmidt?
Yeah, borderline.
He's an MVP, right? Doesn't he?
Yeah,
he's
won MVP
right
a couple years ago. He's...
So basically 290 batting average career, 2,000 hits, 362 jacks. If he keeps going, maybe he gets to 400. I think that matters to him. Seven-time All-Star, NL MVP, Gold Glover, home run leader. Is that enough, though? Is that enough?
Well, it's always compared to the guys in your era. So, I mean, it's... Yeah, he's probably in a good position.
Well, who else is up there in the first baseman? Because Miggy kind of bunt that / DH.
Yeah, but he'll right? Miguel
Rizzo,
Cabrera,
Rizzo
he's a third baseman too.
Rizzo,
Anthony Rizzo. Yeah, it's
I'd go Goldschmidt over him, right?
But here's career-wise. The thing: at the end of the day, though, the answer for the Giants at first base, it's going to be Bryce Eldridge, and I think you know,
a guy that hasn't played in the major leagues.
I mean,
how do we? Okay, so real quick on Bryce Eldridge because Shasky's
well,
talking
no,
about.
Well, no, I mean, no, it's
I've seen this guy. How can you say that?
Well,
Elliot Ramos, or not Elliot Ramos, we thought our guy Luciano was going to be the best thing, and he can't even field the ball.
Well, how are you supposed to find out other than, like, every guy, that's why I hate that whole, we don't know who that guy is. You don't know who this guy will. But, like, everyone is unknown at some point. So, like, miss me with that argument. No, the Bryce
Eldridge experiment is untouchable is what you're telling me right now. He's untouchable.
I think right now, if
I could get someone that's like someone huge out there, who's the big fish that I can trade for right now?
I would honestly, I would not be upset if it was a Bryce Eldridge for Vlad Jr. trade.
There it is.
See,
okay.
I would do that.
Okay.
No, and this is where I think, and we talk about the Giants moving forward.
6'7".
Yeah, he's tall. I mean, again,
he's going to be Aaron Judge.
Time for the legal.
Be Nate Freiman. By the way, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGNZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, and Odyssey Sports Station, always live on the free Odyssey app. I just mentioned two guys that are very tall, one very good and one not very good.
There you go. So when I was a kid, I play a lot of basketball in the driveway with my dad and stuff like that. And whenever we did anything, we always the smack talk line that we would say is, "What do we learn, kids?" That's the line that we would drop on each other a lot. So if I'm the Giants and if I'm asking that question, what do we learn, kids, from what's transpired these last few months, especially around Blake Snell? It's that you just sometimes you can't be attached to your ways. Like we see Kyle Shanahan, he refuses to change his ways. And the San Francisco Giants have fostered this culture over the years of just no matter what, we're always going to try and compete. No matter what, we're always going to be pushing to compete. It was something that I always enjoyed about this team. I like a team that's always trying to win. And I feel like they've almost kind of taken it too far. Like part of the reason why they wanted to hold on to Blake Snell was they wanted to create this illusion that they were in it because they wanted to sell tickets, because there's this belief in this market that Giants fans will never accept a full-on rebuild. And part of that is because historically they've never really needed to. They from 2010 to 2016, they won 3 titles in 5 years, and they did so without ever holding a draft pick higher than 5. And that was Buster Posey in 2008. So Giants fans have kind of been conditioned to believe that you don't need to tank in order to rebuild. I mean, you look at the mid-2000s, they had 4 straight losing seasons, and the Giants will tell you they were trying to compete in all 4 of those years.
You know what's even worse about that real quick, Sam, not to cut you off because you're making a hell of a point? They haven't had the losing seasons, although I wish I would have just had the losing seasons and been bad just to get the better draft picks. Because the apathy is still the same with this team. Even when they're mired in mediocrity, it would have been the same if they had just been bad.
But that's what's different from what this stretch from... See, I compare this stretch to the stretch the Giants went from 05 to 08. When they're a below 500 team. They're stuck in the 70s. But they never had a top 5 draft pick. But people were still invested. Part of that was the Barry Bonds effect. Part of that was Tim Lincecum showed up. The problem with the Giants on these last few years is they didn't have that attraction to get you through the mediocre years. That's where Farhan really failed, and that's why I think you kind of saw this apathy kind of come in. Like, you could do like what the Orioles are doing and build your team around a bunch of a number one picks, and that's eventually going to work out for you. But the Giants, again, 3 titles in 5 years, and they never held a pick higher than 5. So if you're a Giants fan, and I've always kind of submitted this belief too, you do not need to tank in order to get better in baseball. It's all about, can you identify the talent? And more importantly, which I think it's even what's bigger in baseball, more so than finding the talent, you got to develop the talent.
Well, just look at the team that's in your own division. I know it's sexy. I know they just got Blake Snell. They're mercenaries. They go after the free agents. But look at their homegrown
the
guys.
The Dodgers have had a top 10 farm system going back to like 2006. Like, they have had a template over multiple front office regimes of developing players and cranking out big league talent that they've been able to use as a base to bring in big guys, or they use some of those, you know, assets to make trades like for Yu Darvish in 2017, Manny Machado in 2018, Mookie Betts before the 2020 season. Then that sets them up. You know, when you have a sexy team like that, you know, it makes it a lot easier to sign a guy like a Freddie Freeman. You become a lot more attractive option to a guy like Shohei Ohtani, to a guy like Yoshinobu Yamamoto. So it starts at the base and works its way up. But the lesson I think the Giants have to learn here is that you might have to take that step back that you've refused to take for so long. You've so much painted yourself into a corner with these try-to-win-now moves that I think you just have to take the lick next year. I don't think there's a big free agency signing that's going to save this team. It's not going to be Juan Soto. Like, you need to see what you got right now. And also, you can't be afraid to move off of assets. Now, if they did trade Blake Snell, my guess is the guy they got back would not have been that impactful. You know, the example I brought up on Garlic Fries and Baseball Guys the other day was Abiato Avellino. He's the guy who the Giants acquired for Andrew McCutchen in 2018. Did absolutely nothing for this team. But
I think you would have gotten more back from Snell than McCutchen at the time, though.
Even still, though, like, I don't think, like, no top 100 prospects removed. I don't think Blake Snell would have been moved for a top 100 prospect.
Guess we'll
he would have
been
moved for a guy who shows up, plays in August, September, underwhelms, and then I don't know if he's even on the roster next year. But what that does do is it takes away the whole why did you hold on to him argument. Because that's what the Giants did. They swept the Rockies and convinced themselves they had the best pitching rotation in baseball, and it ended up dooming them those final 2 months of what was a flawed team. So the Giants, the lesson learned is sometimes you got to be realistic with where you're standing, and you got to take the step back. This whole we're always going to compete, we're always going to do everything we can to fill the stadium up. No, fans aren't buying that anymore. So going forward, and hopefully this is something that Buster posted, you got to be more self-aware of your standing.
First basemen that are available right now, Christian Walker, 34 years old, obviously been a thorn in the Giants last few years.
I wouldn't say no to him.
At Arizona, 34, 6.8 war last year. Is this career war or last year? Ken, is this career war or is this last year's war?
I believe it's last year's war.
Thank you. So 6.8 war, and what is it good for? Absolutely everything when it comes to baseball, because it's wins above replacement. Pete Alonso, who's 30, had a 5 war last year. Carlos Santana, he's 39. Yeah, I'm out. Paul Goldschmidt, 37, but if it's a stopgap year, why not? He had a 4.4 war last year and a lost year with the St. Louis Cardinals. So just some names there. Again, you're going for a name at least, but also just some production from guys that you hope to get something out of, and maybe you can flip them at the deadline. We'll see. It's not something you're going to be doing 3-4-year deals for any of these guys.
Christian Walker, by the way, hitting a 290 with a 370 on base and a 414 slugging, 783 OPS, and 162 at-bats at Oracle Park.
Yeah, he's a decent player, right? Paul Goldschmidt, I want to say his numbers are incredible.
12 doubles there. So, I mean, yes. he hits pretty well at Oracle.
It's always funny how that works, right? The opposing teams have no problem hitting here, right? But once they put on the Giants uniform, Sam, that's the real test. Is it a
jinx? Some guys have better than others. But again, when you only have to be here for a few days versus an entire season, you know, there's a lot that goes into that as well.
And that's something that Buster Posey's going to have to try to pitch to these guys, right? The ballpark. And that's why there is something with Buster, because he knows this ballpark inside and out. He grew up here as a player. He did all of that here. He's a homegrown guy. He is respected within the league. He knows these players. He knows their tendencies. He knows what they likes. That is something that Farhan just did not have. He did not have that firsthand experience of being at this ballpark and having that and trying to not, you know, swindle these players, because you're not going to swindle guys. They know what they hit here, and they're going to be, you know, looking at a Cincinnati, or they're going to be looking at, I don't know, a Chicago, somewhere else where they feel like they can get as much or maybe a little less money, but maybe I can hit more there and produce. So what do you do? Do you pay them more? Do you talk to them? How's the pitching going to go here?
The reality is, Spinelli, I'm going to cut you out. The reality is, if they want that big bat, they can't go to free agency for it.
You got to trade for it, right?
The Giants, I mean, for the longest time, they were afraid of going after big free agents. I mean, the Barry Zito and Aaron Rowan contracts, I think, really kind of, you know, rattled them in terms of throwing big money at guys. Obviously, Zito, you know, had those two starts in October in 2012. Aaron Rowan was the highest paid player on that 2012 Giants team. He didn't even take an at bat that year.
It's a bad contract, but Zito did win a Cy Young. We act like there's
It was the fact it wasn't a good contract, though. It's to be real. Like, it wasn't a good contract, and it shook that organization so much they didn't want to throw that kind of money at anybody until Smarja and Cueto.
I think they get so much blowback on it. I actually love that contract. Even still would sign it because you know what? It signals that I'm still trying to go all in. As long as the rest of the league, I'm still willing to pay and be a big dog.
Kind
of like what the Padres did, not to cut you out there, Sammy, a few years back with A.J. Preller, when it didn't go well. Remember when they signed all those free agents? We're going to be the big spenders.
Well, you see, I kind of like what Preller did there
Right?
He signed Eric Hosmer.
Okay.
But no, let's switch it. He signed Eric Hosmer to that big deal, but that was not so much about Hosmer, the player in terms of the numbers he's going to bring in. That was about, because you had a very young team on that the Padres were bringing up right there. And that was about bringing a guy who had been there before into the clubhouse. Yeah. Eric Hosmer was still a solid player, but
World Series champion.
He just been a World Series champion. He 90 feet away from being a two-time World Series champion. That's what I saw that Eric Hosmer deal as being. I don't think the Giants necessarily need a guy like that when you got a guy like Buster leading things. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they could. I don't know if there's really any option out there they can go there for that. But no, the best option they're going to have to do is they're going to have to start making trades. If they want to get that big swing, this is where that Vlad Jr. trade proposal comes back in. You know, that's if you really want to shake things up, that's what you do, something like that. Brian Sabian announced his arrival to San Francisco by trading Matt Williams for a bunch of guys, including JT Snow and Jeff Kent. You had that big earth-shattering move. Farhan Zaidi never really had that. The first big move he made was like Yangervis Solarte. You know, the first notable move he made was Kevin Pillar a week into the 2019 season. So, Buster Posey, like, you know, let's start things off with a bang. Other than that, otherwise, like, I'm expecting another 75-win season for the Giants where we're just like, let's see what we can do for 2026.
Oh, boy. What's coming up in the game is brought to you by Los Altos Village Association. The holiday spirit sparkles in downtown Los Altos with more than 150 unique shops. You'll find special gifts and fine holiday dining. Downtown Los Altos is your destination for festive events and fabulous holiday shopping, all with free parking. Get more info at downtownlosaltos.org. Just put a bow on this Giants talk. We'll get back into more NFL talk on the other side because some stuff took place yesterday on Thanksgiving we really need to dive into. Coaching malpractice, quarterback decision-making, Tom Brady going at Daniel Jones. Did you hear what he had to say on the broadcast yesterday? I thought that was very interesting. An NFL owner commenting on whether a quarterback should stay or go. Very interesting. We'll get into that on 95.7 The Game.
This is Adam in the City, and you're listening to The Morning Roast with Bonte Hill and Joe Shasky on 95.7 The Game.
What's up, Adam? Spadoni and Lubman in for Bonte and Shasky. We got one more segment before handing it off to Giddings and Hutchinson. Sounds like a law firm. But Evan Giddings and Jake Hutchinson coming up. They'll take you from 10 to 2. And then Dan
DeBone.
If you've
been injured, it wasn't your fault.
That's right.
Call the lawyers at Giddings and Hutch.
Right? That sounds pretty good. I'll give you a 4 for that, actually. You might have a future in there. Dan DeBone and Lo Neal after them from 2 to 6. So, again, we are live and local all day long on this Black Friday. We thank you for joining us here. 888-957-9570. We've talked Warriors. We've talked Niners. We've talked Giants. We've talked Sharks. We've talked about everything. We talked Raiders, Chiefs. They're playing at 12 o'clock today. 13-point dogs. Who is it? Don and Concord thinks take the Raiders and take the Niners this week, he said, right? It's to win, not the points.
And the Bears.
And the Bears,
too, over SMU in Dallas this weekend.
There you go. Speaking of the Bears, you know what? That was perfect. Let's just relive
Da Bears.
What took place yesterday. First game of the day. And this is what's funny to me, Sam. Forever, the Lions were just the laughingstock. Oh, the Lions are playing. Oh, they're going to lose. Oh, it's the Lions.
So
oh,
it's the Lions on Thanksgiving.
And they're going to suck. They're going to lose. All right. The good thing they're playing first because we can get into the Cowboys after that. But it's the Lions in the first game. Well, all of a sudden, this season, it's like, oh, the Lions are playing. I want to watch them.
Yeah, tune in, yeah.
They're fun.
I realize that was an 8-game losing streak on Thanksgiving they snapped yesterday.
Yeah. And last year, the Packers kicked their ass after earlier last season when, you know, when the Lions kind of flexed their muscles and went into Lambeau and kind of stunted on them. I think that was a Thursday night football game. And then they played another, obviously, on Thursday at Detroit and Jordan Love. It was when, who was my guy? Jack Harlow. Had the worst halftime performance I've ever seen in my life.
I remember,
that igloo was out there. Do you guys remember that?
I remember. That was honestly the first time I'd really seen Jack Harlow play. I'm like, really? This is the dude that all these chicks are getting up, like, all fussy about? Like, this dude's...
Oh, is he? He's getting the chicks fussy? Is that what he's doing?
He's got that look. And of course
he's got that look?
Man, girls love the shaggy hair and all that stuff. I don't know. I'm like, it's like, this is the dude like that we're all nuts about?
They
all
like
right.
his money is what I'm going to tell you right there.
Oh, absolutely.
Lions, Bears, final call. We're going to go through it here. Because for those of you who don't know,
you got to hear all the calls.
Matt Eberflus had one of the all-time boneheaded decisions I've ever seen a head coach make in NFL history. So let's have the voices of Jim Nance do it, the voices of the Lions radio network, and then finally we'll have the Bears radio network. So first, let's let the national broadcast, the television broadcast of Tony Romo alongside the great voice of Hello Friends, Jim Nance.
Clock is running for 15 seconds, and it's 3rd and 26. They have one timeout left.
This is like the light box. You could have gotten numbers, but just didn't.
You better hurry.
Oh, no.
Oh, this is disaster in the making here. You're going to have to do something when it comes down to this play. Incomplete, and the game is over. Completely botched at the end by the Bears.
I can't believe they didn't take a timeout.
So you heard it there. They had 3rd and forever, but they had a timeout, and all they really needed was like 5 or 6 yards, do a little dump off, take a timeout, kick a field goal. What are we doing? It's literally that easy. And yet, the head coach, the rookie quarterback, but and this is where I get on it, and we'll play the other calls here. Just, it's the head coach. Miss me with it. It was Caleb Williams' fault. He should have known this. He should have known that.
No, the way Eberflus managed the clock there was low-key genius.
He needed to know what was happening, and they wouldn't get the play calls. They didn't know what was going on. They didn't do this, that, and this. That goes back to head coaching. That goes back to practice. That goes into 2-minute drills. You should be hammering this stuff each and every week. A 2-minute offense, and that's what it should have been. You had a timeout. You had 3rd and forever. Take a quick dump off. Take an out route. Whatever you need to do, just don't do that. So that was the national call. Let's go to how the Lions felt on their Lions radio network.
There's the snap. Williams back. Williams getting hit. Going to go down. Sack back at the 41-yard line. Za'Darius Smith got him. Loss of 6 on the play. Clock moving down to 24 seconds to go.
That's why 99 is here. That's why he's here.
Yeah, just ran right by him. Moving down to 18. Bears go straight to the line. 3rd and 26 from the Lion 41. Williams with 10 seconds to go in the game. Williams with 7. Williams with 6. Takes the snap. This could be the final play of the game. Throws it deep downfield. It is up to grabs and incomplete. That's it. That's it. That's it. What in the world were the Bears thinking?
Matt Eberflus.
This game is over.
You are down so bad as the Chicago Bears right now. That the Detroit Lions, who have been a dumpster fire my entire life, are now laughing at you. Not only are you last in the division, Sam Lubman, behind Sam Darnold, but behind the Detroit Lions, you get the Packers. The Packers have been the class of that division.
Mm-hmm.
But you are the sole laughing stock now.
Yeah.
They're laughing at you. The radio crew of Dan Miller and Lomas Brown.
They're not smarter than you. Honestly, I love, like, you're listening to that call, and, like, you hear Lomas Brown and TJ Lang, like, slowly start to realize, like, wait, they're not getting the playoff here.
They're
like,
not taking a timeout? That's what he's literally saying. They're not taking a timeout?
Hearing them, like, slowly realize that they're botching this. It's like, I'm watching this in real time, too. Like, do something. Call timeout. Like, they're... And then, you know, Caleb gets everyone up to the line. Then he starts to audible the call. When he started audible the call, I'm like, oh, my God, they're actually going to screw this up. Let's play the Lions call now.
We'll do the Bears, the final one. Here's from the Bears radio network, and I think this one is, this is the best.
Yeah. Time is ticking away, down to 25 seconds. The Bears are out of field goal range. They have one timeout. It's 3rd and forever. Williams at the line, tapping his head. We're down to 15 seconds here. Caleb Williams out of the shotgun. Third and long. Time is moving. Gotta go under 10 seconds now. Oh, my goodness. Back to Williams. He's ready to throw. He'll throw it down the middle of the field. Incomplete at the horn. The game is over. The Bears won't even get to fourth down. They leave Detroit with a timeout in their pocket. And the Lions, for the first time since 16, have won on Thanksgiving. 23-20, the final score. How in the world can that happen? It's the Bears.
All time. You know, if one of you guys can isolate that for me and just grab that as a drop.
It's the Bears.
It's the Bears. That's Tom Thayer and Jason Benetti. Jason Benetti, dude, he's so good. He does baseball. He does basketball. He does football. He does it all.
It's amazing.
He was in for Wayne Larrabee there. No, Jason is really good.
Yeah.
And I can't believe the Chicago White Sox let him go to Detroit, by the way. First year at the Detroit Tigers.
I'd rather be the Bears.
It's just embarrassing.
What it reminded me of? Spadoni, you'll appreciate this throwback. Remember Lane Kiffin's last game before he got fired, where the Raiders lost? I think it was on a walk-off field goal or something like that, and they still had a timeout left in their pocket, too. I just remember watching that game, like, yep, that's the end of Lane Kiffin right there.
It wasn't the 76-yard field goal attempt of Sebastian Janikowski. It wasn't wearing white at home in Oakland, California. Come on.
Like, that was like Eberflus went full Lane Kiffin there. You never want to go full Lane Kiffin. And that's just comical to let that happen, to let your rookie quarterback die on the field out there like that. Like, no, that is absolutely on the head coach there. When you get that sack right there, again, you're 3rd and 26. You only got the one timeout left, which obviously you want to save for a field goal. When that sack happens, first off, why are we calling a quarterback draw?
It's the Bears.
Oh, that's why. But you know, you're calling a quarterback draw there, so like already you're setting yourself up for failure. Because you're the clock's ticking. Why are we doing running plays? You got to be throwing the ball. So that's strike one for Eberflus.
No urgency.
Yeah, the minute you get that sack, though, like, all plans you had, the best laid plans you had for that timeout, they go out the window. You got to stop the clock there because you're going to be what? You're going to be your 3rd and 26. So that next play, you need to get something onto the sidelines there and try and stop the clock. And then that sets you up for your timeout, or not a timeout. That sets you up for the field goal after that. What Matt Eberflus did, though, was just basically stood on the sidelines and pooed his pants. It just let his rookie die out there. And Caleb, I think he was asked after the game about that. He's like, nope, that's not on me to call a timeout. Like, that's, he didn't say it like that, but he's like, that's Eberflus's call. Like,
it's the Bears.
He's got to call the timeout. Like, Caleb wasn't throwing the coach under the bus.
Well, Keenan Allen did. He said, he said, quote, the players did enough to win this game.
Exactly. Yeah.
Caleb Williams,
he's the rookie quarterback, so he's probably not good, but it was just like, no, I'm in that situation. I'm told, you know, it's the head coach that's going to get the timeout there. And Matt Eberflus just standing there completely just, I don't know what's going on.
Well, he doubled down on his decision after the game, speaking to the media.
At the end, when you saw the clock tick down under 10, why didn't you call timeout?
Yeah, so right there, we liked the play that we had. And we were hoping that he's going to call it get the ball snapped, and then we would have called timeout right there. But once it's under 7 there, you know, then you call timeout there, then you're basically throwing the ball to the end zone. Because once it's under 12, you can't throw it inside with no timeout. And it was third going into fourth. You know, so that's a big deal. So it was third going into fourth. That's why we wanted to preserve the timeout.
So how, in retrospect, how should you have handled the final sequence?
Yeah, I like what we did there. Again, once it's under 7, you know, you're gonna call timeout there, or actually under 12, and then really you don't have an option, because it's 3rd to 4th, you got to throw it into the end zone then. So to me, it's I think we handled it the right way. I do believe that you just re-rack the play, get it in bounce, and call timeout, and that's why we held it and didn't work out the way we wanted it to.
95-7 The Game, breaking news.
And almost perfectly, as Matt Eberflus, head coach of the Chicago Bears, explains his lack of decision-making. I don't even know what that was yesterday. Per Ian Rapoport and Tom Pelissero, NFL Network, Bears part ways with head coach.
It's the Bears.
Eberflus. Gone. Let's go. So there you go. Another coach bites the dust. That's 3 this year. So that's Saleh, that's Dennis Allen, and now Eberflus, right? Am I missing anyone? I think that's it. The trifecta is what we call that.
There's going to be more, though, but...
God, oh, there's going to be more. Antonio Pierce, he's probably...
Antonio Pierce, the clock is ticking
Doug Peterson,
for him.
You would assume he's gone, too.
Those are probably Black Monday firings, my guess.
It's over on Black Monday.
Yeah. I feel at this point, yeah, if you're not firing your head coach at this point, like, what are we doing? Or maybe it's going to be one of those, like, you know, the announcement will be made before the last game. This will be his final game, you know, the Jim Harbaugh firing, like that. But I think the Chicago Bears, they don't usually do the in-season coach firings, though. So this
What was Matt Nagy? That was the last one, right? Matt Nagy firing. Let me see there if that was during a game or not. Skip that. No, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so I think that the Bears usually try to stay away from the in-season, because I think ownership, you know, they have... you know, their rules and stuff that they want their team to follow or whatnot, but
it's the Bears.
To go that after yesterday, it was just there was no justifying bringing him back next year. Like, it was, there's no way you could do it, and so it just makes sense. You just cut your losses.
Talking about a change in philosophy, the Bears need to get out of this. You know, I know they won their Super Bowl with one of, if not the greatest defense of all time, and they've hung their hat on defense. They need to go offense, man. And they try to do that with Matt Nagy, but they just had the wrong quarterback, Trubisky. You cannot come out of that game yesterday and tell me Caleb Williams was the problem. Like, he made too many plays yesterday. He was doing too many good things.
He was phenomenal down the stretch.
He was
there.
Great. Like, and he's been like that a lot this season. He's put his team in positions to win.
By the way.
And whether it's a botched field goal, whether it's the coach not taking timeouts, I feel like his team and the coaching staff has let Caleb Williams down way more than Caleb Williams has let the team down. And honestly, he's a rookie quarterback. Jaden Daniels has been taking his lumps. Bo Nix, this didn't start out great for him. He's playing better. But you know what they have? We have Cliff Kingsbury, the offensive coordinator, a guy that's lockstep with Jaden Daniels. And Dan Quinn, a guy that's been there and done it before. He's a defensive guy, but he's gotten to a Super Bowl before with Kyle Shanahan. And then you got over in Denver, you got Sean Payton, who's obviously has his fingerprints all over the offensive play calling, and he's empowering his quarterback. The Bears need to hire someone, whether it's a Ben Johnson, maybe.
Ben Johnson would be a perfect fit.
They need someone to empower their quarterback and young quarterback and get him on the same page with the head coach, because Eberflus, who, if you're just joining us, Matt Eberflus, head coach of the Chicago Bears, fired per multiple media outlets. So he's gone. Bears, obviously last in their division, already looking up to not just the Lions, not just the Vikings. It's the Packers as well. It's all three teams that are probably playoff bound, and you are in last place and soul searching right now after another horrible loss.
Yeah, it's the Bears.
Seriously. So the only time the Bears have had any sort of coaching change mid-season in their history, you got to go all the way back to 1942. When George Halas...
I remember that.
Yeah, it was just like yesterday. George Halas started the season 5-0, but then I believe, as I do a quick search here, he had to go off to war because there was a war going on. You know, World War II?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I recall.
Yeah. So he's had to step down, and Hunk Anderson. How many hunks are you finding these days?
I know Hunk from Resident Evil. That's about it.
And Luke Johnsos finished the job there. Bears went 11-0 that year before losing in the NFL championship game to the then Redskins. So that's the only thing. Not even a firing. Dude had to go to war. So that's why they made the change there. And then the next 3 years, the Bears had Hunk and Luke doing the tag teaming there on the coaching until Halas came back from the war. But yeah, Bears, the first time in their franchise history, which dates back all the way to 1919.
Wow. Do you know what the oldest team in the NFL is? I think this one's surprising, too. I think I looked this up.
It's the Cardinals, isn't
it? So you knew it. Yeah. There you go. But you wouldn't expect that.
Yeah,
they used to be
the
Chicago Cardinals, I'm pretty sure, back when.
I thought they were St. Louis Cardinals.
No, but before that.
Oh, yeah,
before moved
that.
A couple times.
Okay.
Yeah. There you go.
But yeah, so Matt Eberflus, so bad that for the first time since the world was at war, Chicago Bears are making an in-season coaching change. And even that one was a... you know, not even
it's the Bears.
Basically,
it's the Bears.
Like, that's just all time collapse there. It's
Chargers gonna Charger, Bears is gonna Bear, Giants are Raiders are gonna Raider. It's just certain franchises in my lifetime. You just expect bad things to happen. The Bears are one of them.
Yeah. But no, I do think Ben Johnson would be a perfect fit there because, I mean, obviously, I mean, first off, you'd be taking a big piece from your rival, which I think you always want to do that if you're, you know, trying to get better, take away from your rival. And also, I just, the offense they run there in Detroit would be perfect for Caleb. So he's got all the, like, I said going into this season that this is a Bears team that probably should win a playoff game. That's how good they, I thought they were going to be.
Everyone thought so. They should have won their last three games. They've lost six in a row, but you could have made the argument they should have won that Pittsburgh or the Packers game. Mm-hmm. They have blocked field goal. Caleb put him in position. You could have won the Vikings game. And yesterday, you could have at least, at the very least, you should have been going to overtime.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was just, I don't know. And then I'm looking at the head coach openings.
Yeah, 0-6 in these one score games here. 1-6. They beat the Rams 24-18.
Bad coaching.
Or 2-6 because they beat the Titans.
I'm not blaming my rookie quarterback for that. That's coaching right there. If you're losing like one possession games like that,
that consistently,
yes.
They're on a 6-game losing streak right now. 4 of those losses have been by one score.
Sam, I want to play
three
little,
of them to division opponents.
I want to play a little game with you here. I'm going to put you on the spot. All right, and I want you to pull up the NFL draft order right now. Go to tankathon.com,
mm-hmm.
Go to NFL, all right, and I'm going to start listing off all the teams that are going to be having head coaching openings already have fired their head coach, all right?
All right, let's do it.
And I want you to stack them from the, you know, the most desirable to the least desirable. So we can start from 5, 6, 7, all the way to that sort of stuff. It's all right, Ken's working on it. We'll get the game show music here in a second. But we're going to go through all the teams that I think either are going to replace their head coaches or have already fired them. So we'll go the Jaguars. We'll go. That's perfect. Jaguars. Raiders. We're going to go Jets have already fired them.
So we got the Giants. The Giants currently hold the number one pick right
they
now.
They do, but I think they're going to keep Brian Daboll.
I think they're going to keep Daboll, too.
I don't think they're firing him.
I think he's going into next year coaching for his life.
They're going to get him a quarterback that's not Daniel Jones.
Shadur,
so
yeah.
Jacksonville. Las Vegas, New York Jets. We're going to go Chicago Bears now. We got the New Orleans Saints. That's 5. I'm going to keep the 5.
So it's got that 5 right there. All right.
From the least desirable to the most desirable right now of those franchises, if you are a head coach, if you are a Ben Johnson, if you're a Mike Vrabel, whoever's going to be out there, where would you like to go in the order of those 5 teams?
Of those 5.
So start with number 5, the least likely where you want to go to that situation.
All right, so let's see here. We got Jacksonville. I'm going to write these down here. So Raiders, Jets, Bears, and Saints. I think if I'm of those 5, damn, that's talk about a poo-poo
all top
platter.
10 picks, by
probably
the way.
Probably the Bears is right now going to be the number one destination.
Okay, you're because number one first.
You
okay.
you have your quarterback in place. You have a very good young quarterback in place. You got legitimate
number
receiving
one.
Options for him to throw to. I guess I did start at number one. Yeah,
it's
you
fine.
Want
it's fine.
Good.
No, we can do
so,
that.
Yeah. So I think the Bears are number one because you got the pieces on offense. You got a solid running back there in DeAndre Swift. You got pieces to work with. And like we were just saying, it feels like the Bears' reason they're losing, as Keenan Allen said, players are doing enough. So I'm put the Bears at number one.
I would agree with that.
Number two?
Number two.
I think we'll go Jacksonville here.
Wow, that's surprising.
Depending on how you feel about Trevor Lawrence.
That's
again,
true.
If you have a quarterback, you have a chance. And Doug Peterson clearly has lost it with Trevor Lawrence. So if you do move off of Peterson, you do have a quarterback locked in there for the next few years who has shown that he can win games. So I think if you're willing to work with Trevor Lawrence, I think that makes him number two right there.
Okay.
Oof.
Number three.
That's really dicey after that. Number three,
we got
though,
the Raiders, we've got the Saints, and we've got the Jets on the board.
You know what? I'm going to go Saints here.
Ooh.
Because I think you're starting with a blank slate there. Because they're doing a full-on rebuild, so they're going to need a quarterback. So you're basically, if you're taking that Saints job, you're having the opportunity to kind of build a team from the ground up. Whereas with the Bears, you're inheriting a situation that's pretty solid. Jaguars, you're inheriting pieces that you're going to have to work with there. The Saints, it's a blank slate, though. It's a blank canvas. You can do whatever you want. You know, you can Bob Ross that.
So they do have an out. And to your point, I mean, Derek Carr did sign a 4-year deal, $100 million guaranteed. with the Saints last year, but they have an out after this year. But it would include $50 million in dead cap if they wanted to get out of that contract.
I think
that
it's going to be a grind to get out of that. But the Saints, they need to hit a hard reset. It seems like that's what they're doing. And, yeah, I wouldn't mind taking that blank slate. Number four. Oof.
Number four.
The Raiders or the Jets?
Honestly, I think it comes down to what's Aaron Rodgers doing. If Aaron Rodgers is back,
according to reports, he will not be playing for the Jets next year, but still would like to play football.
You know what? I think the Jets are a slightly better option because I think you have a pretty good defense from the Jets right now. And again, that's another one. When Aaron Rodgers leaves, you'll have a bit of a blank slate on the offensive side of the ball to work with there. And you also got a division. I mean, obviously the Bills, they're the class at division right now. The Dolphins, I don't know what their future's looking like right now. And you got a Patriots team that looks like they're a couple years away as well. So I think the Jets there. And then number five is probably the Raiders because...
Number five.
Same reason as always, Spadoni. You and I are well-versed in it. You could change the personnel out on that team as much as you want. It's just, until it gets turned around, I have no reason to think it's going to get turned around.
There's reasons of optimism, and you can fade down the bed here. Thank you, Cam. Doing a hell of a job back there, you and Kenny. Tom Brady's now a part owner of this team, which is going to be very interesting to see how things shake out going forward. Mark Davis, we know as an owner, has not been great with these head coaching decisions, whether it was Josh McDaniels, whether it was Antonio Pierce removing the interim tag, whether it was Dennis Allen before that, Jack Del Rio, John Gruden, like it just hasn't worked under Mark Davis. So getting a fresh pair of eyes in here, a guy like Tom Brady, who has won at the highest level for not one but two franchises in New England and in Tampa Bay, a guy that wants to win at every single level of his life, getting him in the building is only going to help. And I think if I'm Mark Davis, I lean on him a lot. Now, he's new to this, so will that come with lumps? I will say this. His connections are what's going to be most important because I look at a guy that could bring stability, a guy like Mike Vrabel, who's going to have some options to coach at certain places. Do I want to go to a place where I know I'm getting a brand new quarterback, or do I want to go to a place where I know I have to go out and get or keep a Derek Carr? Right, it's going to be that transition. The Raiders did that this year. And you know what? I think it's better for them that they stunk and ended up being one of the worst teams because they needed to rip the Band-Aid off. Mediocrity, whether it's in baseball, whether it's in basketball, and definitely in football, is not going to get you anywhere if you want to be better going forward and getting a good draft pick and getting a wide receiver.
You know, we're talking about all these openings coming up. I think there's one that we seriously omitted here that would definitely shake up that list. And it's the opening that's coming down the pipe in Dallas.
Well, they're not done yet. They've won two in a row. They might be in there.
Mike McCarthy, they're not going to make the playoffs this year, and Mike McCarthy will not be back.
Are you shocked if Jerry Jones kept Jason Garrett forever, who was just mediocre?
What Jerry Jones said earlier a couple weeks ago that I haven't given any thought to firing our coach. Like,
yeah, I kind of believe him.
No, that was, to me, that was the dreaded vote of confidence. I don't think he's going to do an in-season firing, but my guess is... I think Jerry's going to move off Mike McCarthy. I mean, that was a joke of a hire when he first made it. And the Cowboys, they're not getting any better. You're wasting great, you know, prime years of CeeDee Lamb and Dak Prescott, if you want to. We can haggle over the definition of prime if we want there. But no, that is a Dallas team. You talk about the biggest disappointments this year.
I mean, they lost their quarterback, Sam. What do you want them to do?
Well, yeah, are they really going to go anywhere with Dak, though?
I don't know. You could make the argument if I'm Mike McCarthy, and I think Jerry Jones would see that.
They were a miserable looking team before Dak went down.
I just don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Jerry Jones, the guy that I think we like to think that he's this hot takey, all reactionary. No, he actually likes stability. He actually likes keeping Jason Garrett, the clapper, as we call him, because he always used to clap on the sideline all the time. Like, he just... He likes to keep those guys because they're yes men. They'll do what
he says.
I guess
they're going to be...
Jerry likes control, Sam. I don't know if Ben Johnson...
I mean, how many times can the Cowboys keep falling short predictably with Mike McCarthy before Jerry just like, I can't do this
anymore?
That's
what Jerry Jones does, falling short in predictability. That's just who the Cowboys are under him. I'm just saying. But to your point...
No, you make up a good point there, but
rationally...
It would
throw a wrench into everything, yes.
And I think the Cowboy job, I think it's more likely to be open than not after the season.
And that's another situation, right, where they just pay their quarterback. Is Dak the guy you want to be having all that money making, Trevor Lawrence? So there's just questions there. Do you want a blank slate? Do you want to establish quarterback? Do you want a middle tier quarterback? There's the pick of the litter for a guy like a Ben Johnson or a Mike Vrabel or wherever the next hot shot coach coming out of the ranks.
Are these openings better than any of the openings that were open last year? What were the openings from last year? Because, I mean, Ben Johnson was expected to be gone last year, and he didn't take any of them.
Who's a first-year head coach right now that I'm trying to look at? Ooh. Dave Canales. So Carolina was open. They fired Frank Wright. Who else is out there? Mike McDonald. So they got rid of Pete Carroll. Mike McDonald, first-year guy. They're in first place. He's been doing pretty well, I'd say. Dan Quinn. So they fired Ron Rivera. Dan Quinn's out there. They have a team in the wild card right now at 7-5.
Well, it was Arizona, right?
And
or not Arizona, Atlanta.
Atlanta, yeah, Raheem Morris. So there you go. Yeah. So they've actually been pretty good, the first-year head coaches.
So, yeah, it's... Here we go. Yeah, chain head coach.
I got them all. I think those were all of them, right?
Yeah,
there.
Atlanta, Carolina, the Raiders, obviously. The Chargers bring in Jim Harbaugh.
There you go.
That's the one that if Ben Johnson could have gone anywhere, probably would have been the Chargers.
How can I forget Harbaugh?
And obviously the Patriots, they got Gerard Mayo in there. Seahawks moved off, Carroll McDonald. Titans moving off Vrabel to Callahan, the younger Brian Callahan, not the older Bill Callahan.
Three or four.
And then the Commanders moving off Ron Rivera for Dan Quinn. Yeah. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Eight coaching changes last year. Yeah, you know, that's a lot of coaching changes to have to keep track of there. So are any of those... Like, if you're Ben Johnson, are you looking at what's coming up available this year and kicking yourself over what you missed last year? I don't know. Maybe the Falcons job.
I think the Bears are going to be the, like, I would want to coach
just,
that team.
Yeah,
there's a lot of talent offensively, defensively. I really like Caleb Williams. I think his highs have been very high. I think his lows have been low, but that's what you get with the mixed bag.
He's
a rookie quarterback. And I think it's easier to train him to be a pocket quarterback than it is. It's easier to, like, the intangible stuff is what I love about him. His off-script plays, what he can do with that arm, his ability to roll to the right and still chuck it 40 yards down the field on the sideline like he did the other week, it's incredible. It's one of the greatest throws I've ever seen last week against the Minnesota Vikings, and the Vikings tried to gag that game away. And again, it wasn't Caleb Williams' fault in that game when they lost. It was Matt Eberflus's fault, and he's now gone because of it. And by the way, I need to play that drop again because it might be the funniest drop of the year.
It's the Bears!
Bears, you were talking about, as we maybe pivot off the Bears here a little bit, you were talking about the part owner of the Raiders, Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Did you catch any of that broadcast yesterday? You know where I'm going with this.
I certainly did, Sam. And did you see what he was wearing yesterday? He's wearing his silver and black tie, as he is now a member of the Las Vegas Raiders. Just win, baby. Tom Brady...
kind of called out Daniel Jones a little bit. Yeah, let's play
during
that.
During the broadcast, because he's calling the game for Fox Sports alongside Kevin Burkhardt, Cowboys, Giants. Giants no longer have Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones now a backup, or on the practice squad, I should say, of the Minnesota Vikings, where Sam Darnold is. Kevin O'Connell really liked him coming out of Duke, so they took a flyer. Come on over here, Daniel. And Tom Brady felt some type of way about Daniel Jones asking for his release.
I don't know how the whole situation went down, but to think that you would ask for a release from a team that committed a lot to you is maybe different than I would have handled that. I always felt I wanted to get the trust and respect of my teammates, regardless situation, knowing that I was trying to do the best I could for the team because that was the most important thing.
Locke almost gets crushed that time by Parsons, and he got away from it. It seemed complete.
There's just some different things that happen in the NFL, and everyone makes individual choices, and I think we're all at points in our career face different challenges. And I faced them in college, and some things didn't go the way I wanted, but the people that mattered the most to me were the guys in the locker room. I showed up every day. I don't care if they asked me to be scout team safety, be scout team quarterback. I was going to do whatever I could to help the team win.
I'm going to be honest. Like, I get what Brady's doing there, but I didn't really like that he kind of took a shot at Daniel Jones like that. Saying Daniel Jones, like, oh, they really committed a lot to you. Like, I'm always playing for those guys in the locker room. Like, bro, you're Tom Brady. Like, you played for the Patriots, which were one of the most well-run organizations in professional sports. You did not have the circus going on around you that Daniel Jones had in New York. Like, to compare the situation that Daniel Jones was in to any situation that Tom Brady is in, like, to me, that's like a rich person criticizing a poor person for how they spend their money.
Well,
like,
Tom Brady has built his entire career with a chip on his shoulder. And Daniel Jones came into the league a first-round pick. What was Tom Brady? Sixth-round pick?
Yeah.
So that's why he has that mindset of, you know what, I'm going to do whatever it takes to win. I didn't come in as a first-round pick. I got my chance because Drew Bledsoe got hurt. And what did I do with my opportunity? I took it away, and I ran with it, and I never looked back, and I'm the greatest of all time for a reason. Now, there's a lot built into that. Tom Brady is always going to be a better processor and a better mental quarterback. He has a better arm. He has a better lot of things than Daniel Jones ever will. So on that point, I understand, Sam, where it's like, yeah, you're Tom Brady. So of course you're going to say that.
But even that, though, it's like, you know,
Daniel Jones never had a stable situation with the Giants. He didn't have great players around him. No, he didn't play well at all. But no, I want to take it beyond the performance of the quarterbacks. Because obviously, yeah, Brady and Daniel Jones are two completely different levels. They're not in the same room. They're not even in the same county. So that's not what I'm getting at.
Same planet,
but like,
really.
Yeah, it's same galaxy, universe, whatever. Tom Brady is a
reality.
He is a slightly better quarterback than Daniel Jones. But no, it's the situations around him. Because that's what Daniel Jones was leaving. He was leaving a situation with the Giants that just was not healthy for him anymore. You know, again, there's probably other stuff going on the scenes that we're not aware of. Brady admitted that too. But like, again, you say you don't know what's going on behind the scenes. What we did see was a dysfunctional team. When did Brady and the Patriots, especially early in his career, ever have anything close to that level of dysfunction? I don't know. Just to me, in that situation, when Daniel Jones wanted out of a really bad situation in New York where both sides probably need to go in different directions, like, sometimes you just need to go a separate way. Sometimes that's just where it is. Again, I mentioned this earlier, Clay and the Warriors. You know, you could say, Clay, you should have stepped up for those guys in the locker room, blah, blah, blah. Or was it, you know what, sometimes things, for better or worse, just diverge into a direction where it's just best for a clean start for both sides. And for Brady to just kind of go down, I'm not going to like, oh my God, Tom Brady. I just, you know what, Tom, let's maybe not on that one. You know, I disagree with Tom on
picking
that
a guy
one.
While he's down a little bit. Is that what you're a little bit?
Yeah. Okay. It's a lack of understanding too. Like Brady, you had it pretty good your entire career. To criticize a quarterback like Daniel Jones having to go through a difficult transition of this sort, it's just, listen, I like a lot of what Brady says. I have a lot of respect for Tom Brady. This one, I'm not changing my opinion on Tom Brady. Just this one, I'm respectfully, not tongue in cheek, respectfully disagree.
Fair enough. I just think, again, it goes back to his mindset and the chip on his shoulder. He always wants to, you know what, prove people wrong. So when things aren't going well, that's when he thrives the best, right?
Totally.
When people are counting him out, that's when Tom succeeds. When he's down 28-3 in a Super Bowl, that's when he pushes back and he finds a way to win the greatest Super Bowl win I think I've ever seen in my entire life. Definitely the greatest comeback any of us have ever seen in a championship performance. So that's where he was on that. Daniel Jones, you know what? Hey, when the going got tough, he got going, and you know what? It got tough multiple times, and he got battered, bruised, and beaten down. So I'm not going to blame the guy for wanting to get a release, but I also am not going to fault Tom Brady because that's just his mindset and mentality. We got a couple minutes here, but we got my Fast Five. Yeah, let's do it.
It's time for the Xfinity Fast Five. Your last chance to get in on the morning roast. Brought to you by Xfinity. Supercharge your home with supersonic Wi-Fi, unbeatable internet, only from Xfinity.
Also wants one of these jobs. I know that.
I wish he called in today. EPA, I'm disappointed.
Nah, he's chilling.
He's fine. I hope he's not going to wake yet.
It's time for the Xfinity Fast Five, where we give our final thoughts of the show, brought to you by the Next Generation 10G Network. Only from Xfinity, the future starts now. Sam Lubman.
My final thought, it's going to be a big one for Miami tomorrow. They got to go play in the bubble, the Carrier Dome at Syracuse.
Oh, did you go to Miami University?
I did, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that's gonna be a tough one. Kyle McCord, he knows how he could sling it.
He threw like three pick sixes against Pitt.
But Pitt has a defense. Miami doesn't. So Miami's got one of the worst defenses I've ever seen from a top 10 team. But that's gonna be a tough one. Hopefully, Miami plots put 50 up to win that one. And then, oh man, SMU next weekend. I can't believe I'm worried about SMU, but here I am worried about SMU, another team that can score. The only positive is that Syracuse and SMU also have pretty, you know, bad defenses. So, Cam Ward, need you to keep making more of those plays.
From Cam Ward to Cam Williams, Cam is cool. What's going on, Cam? Nice. What's your final thought?
I'd say the Niners, they just don't have it. They ain't got it this year, and it's okay. You know, they need to use this time to rest up, recuperate, recalibrate, do everything, any type of read that they need to just get it ready for next year, because this year, it just ain't the year. They ain't got it.
Well, at least they're not the Bears.
It's the Bears.
So there's that. Kenny, what do you got back there? Your Dolphins took a huge L yesterday. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we sure did. And, you know, I'm going to stay with the delusional Dolphins fan that I am. And I say we still got a chance. But my final thought is, lay off my guy, Tua. Just lay off him.
stinks.
He's, you know what?
As I go standing here, he stinks.
Just to give you a little retrospect, if anybody who's when he watched that game last night, what was the main thing that was the issue for the Dolphins? It wasn't Tua. Tua was fine.
Clearly. Do you see Mike McDaniel shivering on the sideline?
Hang on. This is my final thought here. Give me a second.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this the morning roast with Ken? All right, and Ken?
It is now.
No. Go ahead.
No, but 20 missed tackles? Are you kidding me? 24 points in the first half? Like, Calais Campbell, who's been a leader on the defense, said that's the game right there. That's the reason. Tua was fine. He had 300 yards passing. I mean, some of it was garbage time, but whatever. He had 9 incompletions. I'm not worried about him. I'm worried about all the other things, the penalties. He had 9 penalties yesterday. Still got a chance. I'm not giving up.
I'm happy with Tua Tagovailoa.
He's not giving up. I am, though, on Tua Tagovailoa. But you know what? That is what it is. But my team's never had a quarterback. My final thought today is just don't do anything stupid today or the weekend. How about that? Don't do anything dumb. There's a lot of dumb people out there right now.
Wow, no fun. Okay.
No. But people are like breaking into cars, breaking people's windows. Like, what are we doing around this time?
Don't do
that. Don't do that. Don't be an idiot. And I believe what goes around comes around. No matter how hard your life is right now, and trust me, my life has not been as hard as some of the other people that are listening right now, that are working right now, that are working 12-hour shifts every single day. But I always believe at my core, you don't have to be a jerk. No matter how hard life goes sometimes, you don't have to be rude and you don't have to be a jerk. And what goes around comes around, and if you're a good person, you're a nice person, you are going to get rewarded. Somehow, some way, you will get rewarded. That's my final thought.
Now he's a philosophizer.
The golden rule, baby. And you know what? It's not the golden roast. I don't know what show's coming up next. It's Hutchinson and Giddings. The law firm. The law firm is coming up next. That's what we're calling it.
Love it.
On 95.7 The Game.
I'm out.